Well, please turn to Hebrews 11. We're continuing this great chapter as it's been called the Hall of Faith. It's a catalog, a roll call of many people who lived before us, who displayed a tremendous amount of faith and grit. And we are going to talk this morning about Abraham. Abraham has the most discussed in this chapter of any other person. And I believe that is intentional because Abraham is the father of many nations. He's our spiritual father. And you see in this chapter at least four things of how he displayed this great faith that was given to him by the Lord. So please look now at Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 19. This is God's holy and inspired word. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. This is the word of the Lord. So as I mentioned, there's four things in this text that talk about Abraham's faith. The first thing is faith is acting on God's call. The second thing we'll notice is that faith is trusting God's promises. Then we'll see that faith is looking forward to heaven and faith is acting or is obeying even when it doesn't seem to make sense. So the first thing we learn about Abraham from Hebrews 11 is that faith is acting on God's call. If you look again at verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. I went back and looked. Abraham was 75 years old when God called him to leave his homeland and go to a foreign land of which he had never gone or didn't know he knew very little about. 75 years old, he had been believing in a false god, a pagan god, and out of 75 years, God dramatically changes his life, and then he says, I want you to go to an unknown land and take your close family with you, and then I'll kind of guide you as you move along. Genesis 12, we go back to that account and see, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. As you go on to read Genesis 12, you get to verse 4, and it describes how Abraham immediately left. Now, I want to remind you, for 75 years, he was in this country of Haran. He had settled there. He was older in his years. He is with his family. He was kind of probably set in his ways. And out of nowhere, God comes and says, all right, Abraham, I'm now calling you my own. And I want you to leave everything behind, take those closest with you, and go to an unknown land. And when you get there, I'll kind of tell you what to do. As I looked into this, I studied the Mesopotamian world this week, and I realized that this was very dangerous for Abraham to do. If you were to leave your kindred or your tribe or your family behind and make this long journey to an unknown land, you took a great risk, risking your life. There were thieves that could steal from you. There were even people who could have beat you up and even leave you for dead. But Abraham, he knew that. He knew it was dangerous. It was risky. But because God called him, he responded in obedience. He acted obediently, and he acted on God's call. And he moved despite the risks and the danger that was at stake and that he was going to face. as I was thinking about Abraham, I thought back on when God called me into ministry, and this is very minor compared to what Abraham had to go through. But when I was 12 years old, I began to feel called to ministry, and then at 16, it was really confirmed that I was going to do this for my life. I was really wanting to preach the word and teach the word, and I knew at 16 I was going to do this. I grew up here in Knoxville and went to Cedar Springs and always said, hey, I want to preach like those pastors preached, and I just felt the burden to reach the lost for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I remember when I graduated, I then had to go to college, and I went to Chattanooga for 4 years because you had to go to college before you go to grad school. And so most of my life, I grew up in East Tennessee. I grew up in this area, and I didn't know a whole lot different. And when I graduated college, I decided to go to seminary, which is the logical next step to be a pastor. And I looked all around the country, and I chose Orlando of all places. I thought, this is a fun city and a great seminary, and let's go try this out. 22 years old, had very little to my name, probably $1,000 in my savings account, because I didn't work much, right? I had to go through school, work part-time here and there, and I thought, you know what? We're going to try this thing. And I literally went to Orlando once to visit. This was months before I decided to move. Well, about a month before I moved, I knew I needed to have a place to live. And back then, they really didn't have a lot of online options to view. And so I went, when I went a couple months before, I ended up looking at a newspaper and then was able to get some friends to send me some newspapers that I barely knew. And I looked at the newspaper, the University of Central Florida, and at the back of it, it had a listing of places to live for graduate students or college students. And I thought, well, I'm going to just call and see because I can't afford to live on my own. So I ended up making several phone calls, and I met this guy just on the phone and said, okay, he seems nice, and I need to just get there. So so my parents moved me there, and I'm there 22 years old, and I knock on the door, and I'm expecting the 22-year-old college student or graduate student, and I didn't see him. It was a 40-year-old man who opened the door. I'm like, this is not who I talked to on the phone. Well, it turns out, from when I called this 22-year-old, he ended up finding somewhere else to live, and this 40-year-old man ended up moving in. And I'm like, what did I get myself into? It turns out the man was disabled, and he was living on disability and didn't have a car. And I thought, what am I getting into? And my parents were there, and they're looking at me like, do we just leave him? And my mom, I think my mom's here. Mom, you don't know some of this, but my mom, I literally, you're going to find out now, but my mom, she literally was walking to get me and basically rescue me. And my dad, he went like this and he said, no. He says, he's a 22-year-old young man. He's got to figure this out. This will be good for him. And I'm so glad my dad did that. I'm so glad he did that. But anyway, so fast forward, I go 3 weeks, get to know this guy, we'll call him Greg. And Greg ends up asking me for rides all the time. He ends up taking most of my food. And there was a point where, and this is the story my mom doesn't know, I locked my door and I put a knife under my pillow because I was like, what if this guy busts through? You know, this is pretty scary, pretty risky, pretty dangerous. Well, while I was there for those 3 weeks, I put on a tie. I go to about 100 stores just to interview because I didn't have a job. I was like, I got to work. So I ended up getting hired and I started saving money and I was able to move out of that house after 3 weeks. And I got into a new rental with other college students and they were my age and stage and it was a much better situation. And after a year, I got to meet some seminarians and we ended up moving into a home and it was a much better situation. Why do I bring all this up? Because one, I'm glad my dad did what he did. I needed to grow up and I needed to learn. But two, it was an example, right, of going to a place that I didn't know. I didn't know anyone there, really. I didn't know what I was getting into, but I knew that God was calling me to do something. It was risky, it was unknown and uncertain, but I trusted that God would provide. And it was hard, and a lot of foolish mistakes that I made at 22 years old, right? If you could always go back, you know, all of us have that do-over. I wish I could go back and do that over again. That was me, right? But at the same time, I learned from it. And God said, here's your calling, go. This is a much smaller smaller example than what Abraham had to do, because Abraham had a wife. Abraham had had Lot and family. He left everything behind, and he went and he got settled in. But really, he didn't ever settle. He lived in tents for the rest of his life when he got there. And so, just imagine the questions Abraham was getting from Sarah, his wife. When are we going to get there? What's it going to be like? How are we going to support ourselves? Where are we going to live? I'm sure question after question after question, and Abraham had to continue to tell her, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. But yet, they still responded. They still obeyed. And not only was this dangerous, but I want to remind you that this must have been difficult because Abraham was no longer a spring chicken. He's 75 years old, and he's having to uproot. When you're 75, you get kind of set in your ways. You get kind of comfortable. Not Abraham. God said, I don't care if you're 75. I'm calling you to go. And Abraham responded, and he said, here I am at your service. He displayed a radical obedience because he had a radical faith. And as I think about what Abraham did here in this first example, I think about that song, Trust and Obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Trust and obedience, they go hand in hand. You can't sever them. They go together. And it was A.W. Pink who said, faith and obedience can never be severed. As the sun and light and fire and heat, obedience is faith's daughter. They go hand in hand. So as I think about Abraham and how he acted on God's call, I want to ask you this question. What is God calling you to do? Is he calling you to do something that is a little risky? Is he calling you to do something that is a little uncertain and unknown? Is he calling you to move? I don't want you all to move, but is he calling some of you to move? Is he calling you to go on the mission field? Is he calling you to have that important conversation with someone that you have kind of neglected for many years and dreading to have? Is he asking you to step out in faith and pursue a new ministry or a new calling or a new job? What is it for you? I might be talking to you right now, and if I am, God is saying, hey, let's go. I'm calling you to do this. So if he's calling you to do it, then obey the call. And that's exactly what Abraham did, and that's why he's mentioned here as having faith. He acted on God's calling. The second thing we notice about Abraham is he trusted God's promises. Verse 11, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man and him as good as dead were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand on the seashore. Right here we see that Abraham, he trusted God's promises along with his wife. But, you know, I'm taking a class right now. I'm working on my doctorate. And the class I'm taking is Humor and Storytelling and Preaching. It's been a great class. There are many passages in Scripture that are funny. I think this is one of them. Why? Because it says Abraham was as good as dead. When I read it, I just started laughing. I was like, that's hilarious. He's as good as dead. He's an old, you know, old man. And he's like, I don't know if I can have a child. You know, at this time, he's 99 years old, right? It's like, man, he's as good as dead. And this is what it's saying here. Abraham is as good as dead. And as I think about it, I think about Genesis 17, when God called Abraham, he's old. And he said, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I've made you the father of a multitude of nations. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make you into nations, and kings shall come from you. So this is God coming to Abraham at this point at 99 years old. So let me just go back. Abraham's 75 when he's called to leave his religion behind and go and believe in God and leave his family behind and go to this new land that was unknown. 75. At 86, he ends up, what Andrew was talking about, he went through a rocky season in his faith, and he began to question things, like we all do. He began to doubt, and he had a spiritual dry season. And he said, well, God promised that out of my line would come a descendant, but it's not happening yet. I'm 86 years old. He's like, I don't know if we can have a child. And so he decides to kind of shortcut the process, and he and his wife Sarah agreed that he could sleep with her servant. And out of that, he ends up having Ishmael, this stepson, rather, not biological kid. And he ends up having the son, and he's thinking, well, here's the son that God will bless. And that's not what God had in mind. That was at 86. Abraham made a big mistake. Abraham, just like you and me, he's a sinner. He really struggled, right? But at 99, 13 years after this moment, after 86 when he had this Ishmael, 99 years old, God came to him in Genesis 17 and said, hey, I'm still going to make a great nation out of you. Genesis 18 tells us when Sarah hears about this, she laughs. And she said to herself, after I'm worn out, my Lord is old, shall I have my pleasure? Again, kind of funny here. She's laughing. She's like, man, I'm old. I'm not having a child. Are you kidding me? But what's interesting here is this was biologically impossible to us. We would say, you know, a roughly 90-year-old woman, 99-year-old man, really? You're going to have a child? But with God, all things are possible. And what I love about Romans 4 is, once again, it describes not only Abraham's faith at this moment at 99. I think he learned a few things, like we all do as we grow up and we get older. But we also see, again, that funny line is he was good as dead. Romans 4. In hope he believed against hope, this is Abraham, that he should become the father of many nations, as had been told, so shall your offspring be. He did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old. About 100. Or when he considered barrenness of Sarah's womb. Okay, my wife hasn't been able to conceive for my whole life, our whole married life, so really, Lord? But no unbelief made him waver concerning the promise of God, but he grew strong in his faith as he gave glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. So right here, we're seeing a man who has learned over the years to trust in the Lord. Despite his mistakes, despite the risk and the uncertainty, he's now learned through the school of hard knocks. He's maturing. We're seeing finally Abraham maturing at 112 years old at this point when he had the child, or 100 years old when he had the child. We see him just growing, and right here it said, no unbelief made him waver concerning the promise. He grew strong in faith, and he gave glory to God. So I believe the reason why he was able to trust in the Lord is he was fully convinced that God was able to do what he promised to do. He became fully convinced that God would keep his promises, even when he was 100, and Sarah was roughly, 90 years old. He was fully convinced. Faith is trusting God's promises, even when it seems bleak. The third thing we learn about Abraham is that he was looking forward to heaven. Faith is looking forward to heaven. Verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. You know what's fascinating about Abraham? And I learned this week, and I went back and I knew this, but it was a good reminder. When he got to the land of Canaan, he basically lived in tents. He never really settled when he got there. We know in Acts chapter 7, verse 5, it says that God gave him no inheritance, not even a foot of the ground. The only land that Abraham ever owned was Sarah's tomb, a cave in the field near Hebron. That's the only thing he owned, the only plot of land that he owned. You think about how some of you might just own your graveside one day, or a grave plot. That's all he owned. And what Hebrews is telling us is, here he is, a man of faith who leaves everything behind. He goes into this land living in tents. I'm sure his wife is like, why are we in this tent still? Living in tents. But yet, he never really got to experience what God promised him fully. But that didn't bother him. He kept pressing on. As I was thinking about this, I couldn't help but think about what's happening in our church lately. Our elders, we have a strategic planning team. We've been meeting for 2 years to talk about what's next. What does God have in store for us in the building campaign coming up? But here's what I want to tell you, just to give you a teaser before we even go there. We are going to rest, and when we get debt-free, we're just going to breathe for a little while. We're just going to enjoy being debt-free. And then the big ask will come. After about 9 months or so or a year, we're going to say, here's our need. And we're going to get uncomfortable for a time. We're growing. We need buildings now. But we're going to wait. We're just going to be smart, and we're going to be wait. But for 2 years, we've been talking about this, and some of our elders have said something that's been fascinating to me. They said, you know, this might be a 10 to 20-year process before we start raising money and we build. And then many of them said, we're not ever going to see it. We're going to be dead by then, maybe. And as I hear them saying that, I'm thinking, that's a good perspective to have. Because they said, we don't care if we don't see it. We care about the health of the Christ covenant. We care about the future of this church. We want this church to be healthy. And even though we may not see it, Who gives a rip? Because at the end of the day, it's for the Lord. It's for his kingdom. And we're going to do all we can to leave this church better off for the future. That's what Abraham did. That's what shows his tremendous faith and grit. He lived in tents. He lived in this promised land, and he never really saw the fruits of his labor. But his son would, and his grandsons would, and his great-grandsons would, and et cetera, et cetera. That's how we need to operate. We need to hold this life loosely, and we need to think about how can we make this place better for our children and grandchildren? How can we leave this world better instead of just benefiting now? It might take a little sacrifice now, but it will be better for our children and grandchildren. And that's the perspective Abraham had. And how was he able to have this perspective? You know what I believe? I believe that he had an eternal perspective. And he knew that when he got to Canaan, he lived in tents, it was going to be temporary because he was awaiting his heavenly home. Verse 14, for people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. If Abraham was thinking, I need to go back home, he could have gone back home where it was comfortable. But he said, no, I'm not going back home because God has called me, by golly, to go to this land that I know nothing about, and I'm going to sleep in a tent and I won't even get to see the fruits of my labor, but my kids will and my grandkids will. And in verse 16, but as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. What's being said here is that Abraham was able to just grin and bear it and say, I'm not going to benefit a lot from this in my lifetime, but I know one day I will benefit in heaven. I'm seeking a better country, and my focus is on heaven. As I thought about this, I thought about John MacArthur's quote where he said, the Christian is willing to forsake the present glory, comfort, and satisfaction of this present world for the future glory that is his in Christ. In contrast to the buy now, pay later attitude that's prevalent in the world, the Christian is willing to pay now and receive it later. What makes Christians willing to make such sacrifices? Hope, based on faith that the future holds something far better than the present. You know, as I think about Memorial Day weekend, I think about how a lot of people this weekend will buy now and they will pay later. That's the mindset, Memorial Day weekend. That's the attitude of the world, but the Christian's attitude should be willing to pay now and receive it later. Sacrifice now and we'll receive it in heaven one day because heaven is a better country. By the way, the word better is mentioned all throughout Hebrews. It's the theme of the book. Jesus is better than anything else. Heaven is better than this earth. We see it once again right here. Better, better, better. As I think about this eternal perspective and how faith is looking forward to heaven, I think about Henry Morrison. Henry Morrison was a missionary in Africa, and I wanted to talk about this because we just talked about Africa. Henry Morrison, he was in the United States. He was called to go to Africa, and he went with his wife, and they lived there for 40 years in Africa. When he comes home at retirement, he's on a ship, and he's shipped back into the States after being gone for 40 years, and he happens to be on the same ship as President Teddy Roosevelt. This was years ago. As they get close to the port in New York, they notice a band playing, a big fanfare. The media was there. They were all celebrating because President Roosevelt, who went on, a week-long vacation, he arrives home after being gone a week, and everybody's throwing out the red carpet saying, President Roosevelt, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. You're here. And then Roosevelt gets off the ship. Then Henry Morrison gets off. Nobody's there to welcome him. Nobody's there to celebrate. And Henry starts feeling sorry for himself. He's like, man, I just spent 40 years in Africa and nobody's there to celebrate all the things that we did in Africa. Nobody even knows or gives a rip. But everybody cares about President Roosevelt coming home from a week-long vacation. What's up with that? And his wife, she looks over at him and she noticed he was getting frustrated. And she said, Henry, you're not home yet. Heaven is your home, not New York City. You're not home yet. As we think about faith, we think about longing for a future better country in heaven, a future city that is beyond this world. That's what faith is. The fourth thing about faith that we see in Abraham in verse 17 through 19, it's obeying even when it doesn't seem to make sense. This is where it gets really hard for Abraham. And this is where he's around 112, as I was talking about earlier, I was thinking about this, 112 years old. Verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. Abraham now is around 112 years old. I know this because in Genesis 22, we know Isaac is about 12 or 13, his son. That's the age of my son. My son Caleb is 12 years old. I can't imagine God telling me right now, sacrifice your son. But God told Abraham to do that. That just seems to blow my mind. I'm sure it blew his mind. A 12-year-old son? Lord, you promised that Isaac would be the son that would then generations would follow. And we waited so long to have this son, and now you're telling me to kill him? What? Why? I think because Abraham put more of his focus and love on the gift than the giver. He began to elevate his son and put so much of his heart affections towards his son, which was a gift from God, and he forgot about the giver. And God was telling Abraham, I want your heart, Abraham. I want you. I want your full allegiance. And so Abraham, it says, by faith, when he was tested by God, he said, okay, if you tell me to kill my son, I'm going to do it. Doesn't make sense. I have no idea why, but I'm going to do it because you told me to do it. And it seems to go against your promise. Your promise is that I'll be a father of many nations. Well, now you give me a son, and now you want me to kill him, and that's your command. Your promise and your command are not really adding up here. And it was John Owen who said, sometimes through God's providence, there may appear to be inconsistency between God's commands and his promises. Nothing but faith, bowing the soul to divine sovereignty, can reconcile this. I love that last line. So sometimes in life, God will say, I promise this. And then we reach kind of a point in our life where it seems like he's commanding us to do something different than what he's promising. Whoa, that seems inconsistent. If and when that time comes, nothing but faith, bowing the soul to divine sovereignty, can reconcile this. What is John Owen saying here? You know what he's saying? He's saying that trust in God's sovereignty. Even when it doesn't seem to make sense and you're scratching your head like, Lord, really? You want me to do what? That seems to go against what you said earlier. God doesn't contradict himself. God is not inconsistent. So we have to trust, even when it doesn't seem to make sense and even when it's not clear, God has a plan. God knows so much better than what we know. And he ultimately knows what's in our best, and he has our best interest at heart. And you know what I love about Abraham here? Again, he's 112 at this point. He's really growing in his faith. It's saying in Hebrews 11 that Abraham believed that God would raise his son from the dead. He truly believed that if God's calling me to sacrifice my son, then he will raise him up from the dead. And we know this because in Genesis 22, verse 5, when Abraham is walking along to the mountain with his son, about to sacrifice his son, he has the servants with them. Genesis 22, 5, he tells his servants, stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you. You know what he's saying here? He's saying, just hang out here. I'm going to take my son. I'm going to sacrifice him. God's going to raise him back, and then we're going to come back where we left you. Interesting. But Abraham truly believed that God would do the impossible, and he showed true commitment and loyalty to the Lord. That's faith. That's faith. So as we think about Abraham's faith, let me ask you these questions. What things are you putting before God? He was putting Isaac before God, and God was saying, I need your heart. I need your full allegiance. What are you putting before God right now? What gifts are you putting before the giver? The second thing I want to ask is, do you truly believe that God can do the impossible? Do you truly believe it? And if so, what are you trusting him to do? Now, God may choose not to heal you from your sickness. He may choose not to restore that relationship that you've been praying about, but he might. He may not. The bottom line is, we know that one day he will in heaven, right? Everything's going to be good again in heaven. But regardless, he still wants us to pray and trust. And with God, all things are possible. And so again, as we think about Abraham, we think about just this faith, and God gave him the faith. He couldn't do it himself. God had to help him throughout his life. Because just like Abraham, we're all a work in process and work in progress, right? But that's what we see in Abraham. So as we conclude and as we prepare for the Lord's Supper, let me just remind us what faith is. It's acting on God's call. It's trusting God's promises. It's looking forward to heaven. And it's obeying even when it doesn't seem to make sense.